Well, preserving your freedom. This is the hour we'll take your phone calls with Chris Duane right here on Coast to Coast AM. So stand by. And welcome back with Chris Duane. Chris, we were talking about some of those reasons why you think there could be riots in America. And again, let's go back. What are these telltale signs?
Well, I believe that the nexus is going to be the collapse of the dollar. Without having a dollar, you know, the economy simply ceases to function. And it brings about massive counterparty risk, so much so that people either can't or won't fulfill the promises that they made. So, you know, if you're renting and the whole world changes and, you know, food is much more important than your rent, you're probably going to skip out on your rent. If the food and fuel stops going around, you're probably not going to care so much about your Apple stock because you need to buy a gallon of gas. The thing that really scares me, George, and I don't think anybody realizes, food and fuel, yeah, you got 3 or 4 days with the, in the system. To me, the scariest thing is that we have 27 million Americans on antidepressants. You know, these...
It's huge. That's right.
Yeah. Well, think about this, George. We've seen that when people come off these drugs too fast, they have psychotic breaks from reality. And so here we have 27 million Americans on antidepressants in an age where, you know, geez, yeah, I get the economy's bad and things are tough, but we still have food and fuel. There's no one knocking on your door, taking you away. There's no bombs blowing up. I mean, people in Baghdad have much more reason to be on these drugs than the average American. And yet, if we have a supply disruption of these drugs during a time when there is real reason to be fearful and depressed and scared and, really worrying about stuff, people are going to have psychotic breaks. And that's 1 in 10 Americans. I mean, chances are you have somebody in your friends or family or neighbors that are on that. And if we do have this, big break, it's, we've already started to see these zombie people, biting people and all that other stuff. This progressively gets worse, George. I mean, this is something that we have to deal with. I mean, you look at all these school shootings and the mother that drowned her 5 kids and the tools, they were all on these antidepressants and came off them too quick.
Yeah, you're right.
It's a scary reality to think about that.
And we will have drug shortages. And, what about people who are on blood pressure pills and things like that?
Well, my wife is Greek, and we have a lot of relatives in Greece, and simply just getting aspirin in Greece is a problem. I mean, we had to send bottles over there just to, because it's they're you can't get it over there, and they're really concerned about, if the power grid goes down. They had all sorts of emergency meetings just to keep the power grid up, and then you have all these people who are on, in the hospitals and stuff. It's the dramatic consequences, and I think they're going to be more prevalent in urban areas where there's a larger concentration of ill-prepared people than the rest of the country. And I kind of give this example. Think about when the natural disaster Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans. You know, it was a natural disaster, totally wiped the slate clean. There was, the equivalent of a dollar collapse there because, food and fuel stopped coming in, and, social contracts are broken, and, it was kind of mass hysteria. And there was looting and rioting and raping and all sorts of nasty stuff that was going on. And yet you look at when these same natural disasters hit like the middle part of America with these massive Mississippi floods and tornadoes and stuff, you don't hear, the raping and looting and all that other stuff. It's really marked by neighbor helping neighbor. And I think that's kind of the two ways I think that this dollar collapse is going to happen, where, urban areas are ill-prepared, full of people who are, let's face it, if you live in a city, you have to be more aggressive. I mean, New York is the line is if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere.
Make it anywhere.
But the reality is if you can swim with those sharks, then, you can swim with the guppies anywhere. And in the middle part of America is much more community-based and neighbor helping neighbor. And I think that the dollar collapse is going to affect everybody. I mean, they're going to wipe out all their assets and all that other stuff, and food and fuel are going to be an issue. But I think the middle part of the country is probably better prepared emotionally, spiritually, certainly probably better prepared physically because, the average suburban can at least, plant a garden, even if they, very few people even know how to do that nowadays. But I think the urban areas are going to be marked by, massive riots and upheaval. I think the southern cities like, Los Angeles and Miami are probably going to turn into very bad areas that I don't know if are ever going to come back. I think the northern cities like New York and Chicago will probably go through these riots, but come out more of a police state, a totalitarian state. I mean, you can see guys like Mike Bloomberg and Rahm Emanuel with their cameras everywhere and their big police forces, and they, you know, all these fancy helicopters. You know, order will be restored in those cities, but it's probably not going to be anywhere near the America that you're used to. And you're going to have to give up probably even more rights now to live in those safe areas. But I think the rest of the country, I think, is going to be scared straight of the horrors that are going to happen in the urban areas and really start getting back to what made this country good. And it's, you know, getting back to honest money and honest people and, you know, this sense of, you know, not overextending yourself and helping yourself. And I think that the middle part of the country, the mass parts of the country are going to get hit, but I think they're going to recover a lot quicker.
Okay, well, I hope you're right. Let's go to some of the calls now. Keith, truck driving in Indiana, east of the Rockies, you get us going. Go ahead, Keith.
Hey, George. Hey, I got a question. If the now, you're saying if the dollar collapses, you're saying that if we buy silver, that would be a good thing. But if there's nothing to buy because we run out of supplies everywhere, what does the silver even do you any good to begin with?
Yep. If you look at a lot of my videos, the first and foremost thing, everybody needs a buffer of food. And people ask, well, you know, how much do I need? Well, it depends on how, you know, close you are to these urban areas. You know, if you're in an urban area, you can't buy enough food, and I wouldn't buy a dime's worth of silver because if you have to kind of lock yourself in, you need a lot of food. But, yeah, certainly food, water, the means of protecting yourself, you know, survival supplies should come first and foremost. But at some point, for a lot of people, you know, you have to have the ability of having money because you can't have everything that you want, and that's what the function of money does. It allows you to say, hey, I'll barter my money, which is kind of universally accepted throughout all of human history, and that's the role that it served, to go out and buy the things that you need. And I have been in places where of extreme poverty. When I was in the Marine Corps, we went to the Romania and Kosovo and areas that were totally, you know, very poor. You could buy food and water and stuff because people have excess stockpiles of it. And I think that if you're out of the Mad Max zone, you know, these urban areas where there's riots, you know, certainly gold and silver are going to be completely worthless because it's going to be much more of a basic level. But if I think the further you get out of those areas, you'll find local economies, barter systems will spring up, and that you know, gold and silver will certainly you know, be a critical role in having a function economy. But people definitely need to have that buffer of food, have water, have protecting themselves.
That's just smart.
Yep.
I mean, that's just smart. Let's go to Santa Cruz, California, west of the Rockies. Brandon's with us. Brandon, thank you. Go ahead.
Hi. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi there.
George, I got to tell you, I've been riveted all night. You put together, and your crew have put together a really great show. It's really pertinent to a lot of anxieties and concerns that I've been having lately. And I'm sure probably, you know, a lot of other people in America have been. Christopher, I've been really impressed by your interview, and I've been perusing your website while during the breaks. And, you know, I must say, like, I have kind of a newbie question for you as far as acquiring silver just in a physical form. Like, where I'm finally at a point in my life where I'm able to start, you know, and I've been wanting to, you know, get a hold of some silver supplies and, you know, put away for a while. But where do you get silver? I've done like searches and all, and I'm kind of overwhelmed. Do you get it through banks, or can you like recommend like a source, you know, at all? Yeah, that's basically what I wanted to know.
Thank you. I actually addressed this in one of the last videos I did on YouTube called How to Buy Silver, and it's a 10-minute video. If you go to my YouTube channel, you can and go about doing that. When I first woke up to buying silver, I was like, geez, how do you go about doing this? I certainly know how to buy stocks. There's advertisements on TV for, you know, E-Trade and all these other things to go out and buy it. But, you know, buying physical silver is a very odd thing to do. You know, and it could be as simple as just going to your local coin store. I mean, believe it or not, if you go into, you know, Google site or whatever, there's coin stores probably all around you. And I think that's the first recommendation I would do. Because we've become so detached from money and are used to this automatic debit system and automatic pay system and automatic thing that we don't even know what money is anymore. I think for the person who does not have any experience, go to your local coin store and go pick up a gold coin. Go pick up a 1932 peace dollar and feel the wealth and feel the reality of it, and think about, you know, geez, this is probably metal that was mined, you know, hundreds of years ago in Bolivia, or, you know, wars are fought over this, and this has been melted down, or the real tangible nature of it. And I think that gives you kind of that connection back with what reality is and what real tangible wealth is. And, you know, real tangible wealth doesn't have to be silver or gold. I'd feel safer in Beanie Babies, quite honestly, than, you know, Apple stock or money sitting in the bank, because at least that has some tangible value. But if you go to the YouTube channel and say, you know, how to buy silver, my video is up there, and it could, you know, give you a lot of, you know, what to buy and how to buy, and companies that you can go to online.
Okay, great. Next up, we go to our wild card line. It is Andy in Los Angeles. Hey, Andy, go ahead.
Hi, George. Great show.
Sure,
and you are a great patriot, George. Yes, I'd like to get your guest's comments on what I'm about to say, which is that Franklin D. Roosevelt said many years ago, nothing happens big in government by accident. Wouldn't you say that the people behind this move for the one-world government and a one-world currency, these people are extremely well-funded, extremely bright. They have tremendous power in government. And wouldn't you say that everything that's going on today is part of a long-range plan to eventually collapse the world's currency and bring everybody into this cashless society? And whoever is not in the computer, basically, and doesn't go along with the program is not going to survive. Do you have any comments on that?
Sure. I think that is the dream of these elitists, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds. They certainly have been, you know, setting about doing that, and they've done a very good job. I mean, they've pretty much dominated the whole world. But I don't think that's going to come to fruition. So there's a couple factors going against them that I don't think they have any shot of stopping. Number one, people are waking up. The advent of the Internet, there's a quote from Senator Jay Rockefeller, who's, you know, his family obviously is involved in this, and he said that, you know, we shouldn't have allowed the Internet to be born because, you know, the threat that it poses to the system. And, you know, you look at what they want. You know, they want a world government. They want all this other stuff. But the reality is that this is an Anglo-American world. And that while we dominate the world right now, there's a lot of nations that don't benefit, don't like us, and are really actively going against us. To me, there's two forces, and I covered this in my Silver Bullet and the Silver Shield videos on YouTube. There's this anti-hegemon that I call them, and if, you know, the United States and this Anglo-American empire is the hegemon of the world, the anti-hegemon would be nations like China, Russia, India, Brazil, South America, the BRICS nations, and they're forming strategic, political, military alliances, and their sole factor that they have in common is that they don't benefit from this current system, and they have so much more to gain from a collapse of a dollar so that they can kind of flex their regional muscles in the, you know, the Asia continent, where, you know, I think 75% of the world's energy resources, you know, 80% of the world's population, you know, all resides there, and the United States and England are going to be on the outside looking in. The other factor I think has going against these guys is, you know, if you look at any of these major collapses, I mean, the Soviet Union to me was a brilliant study on what happens when a superpower collapses. But I don't think that this collapse is going to lead to further consolidation. I think we're going to have massive decentralization of power, where all power is going to derive down to the most local and responsive levels, where you're going to see, you know, Mayor Mike Bloomberg have more say over the Northeast than the President of the United States, because that certainly was the case in the collapse of the Soviet Union. The mayor of Moscow, he became pretty powerful. And that local and responsive level is going to go down to your friends and family. You're not going to care what the federal government says, because they don't even have the power to pay their agents anymore, you know, worrying about this big, bad police state. I can tell you, when the Soviet Union collapsed, Soviet soldiers starved to death, waiting for food, waiting for orders, waiting for stuff, because there was a collapse in everything. And when they did get paid, it wouldn't even buy the can of dog food. That's what a hyperinflation did for them.
You have said that the planet's being run by psychopaths. Explain.
Well, again, getting back to that line, you know, there's two kinds of people in the world. There's, you know, people who want to be left alone and people who won't leave you alone. And we see that in these psychopaths thrive on two major things. Well, fear. They love using fear to put those toxic thoughts in you and make you, you know, be afraid and run to them for safety. And centralization of power, you know, that a centralized structure of any kind will naturally lead to these criminal psychopaths running to the top, because the people that are willing to do anything for power, you know, tend to get to the top of the chain. And you look at, you know, the heads of these, you know, Wall Street firms and the head of Enron and, you know, certainly our political class. I mean, what kind of sane person puts themselves through all this scrutiny and stuff, you know, to get the power? And, you know, at the end of the day, they want to either financially dominate you by rigging the financial markets. They want to politically dominate you by legislating. And you know, certainly this Obamacare thing is a perfect example of that. And that the further concentrated of power, you look at the top of the people that are there. And this is a fun little thing for your audience to do. Look up the, you know, 20 or 14 traits of a psychopath, and they come up, and you start looking at our leaders, and geez, they seem to really fit all these specific guidelines that psychologists would use to identify psychopaths.
Well, they do. Let's go to Livermore, California. It's our old friend Mike. Hey, Mike, go ahead.
Hey, George. Hi. Nice to talk to you once again.
You too.
You're right up my alley here. I've been pretty much got to have food, got to have water, got to have ammo. But I'll tell you what, the most important thing out there is going to be toilet paper, because that's going to be your biggest bartering.
And being a Marine, I can certainly attest to that, because I've been in many situations where, you know, you have all those other things. But, man, you know, if you don't have that toilet paper, you're a very crabby person.
You're still a Marine, Chris, or retired?
Well, once a Marine, always a Marine. But I got true. In 96. I did kind of a weird thing. I went to Boston College first, graduated, joined the Marine Reserve in 96. I got activated in 01 for Operation Enduring Freedom and got out in 03. So, you know, I did 7 years there, best group of guys. I'm glad I did it before I woke up, because I think I would have had a real conscious I'd probably be a conscientious objector now, because of the indoctrination that the Marines put you through to, you know, essentially be a homeless, you know, trained killer. And I was in infantry. It certainly doesn't resonate with who I am and what I want to be now.
I went the Navy route.
Yep, you're a brother in arms there.
That's right. And my unit called up to the first Desert Storm in 91. I had just 1 month before that. Had just retired, and the entire unit was there. They were assigned to Schwarzkopf, and they were in Saudi Arabia doing all the media work and everything else with him. And a couple of my dear friends, one of them went off to be an admiral in the Navy. So they kept pushing that.
Well, and George, this is a kind of a good thing. You know, we talked about our this indoctrination that we get. This, you know, in school, you're presented, you know, a bunch of facts, and you have to regurgitate it. It's a two-step input-output process. That process serves really well for governments, militaries, and corporations. And by the way, that's who dominates the world, those institutions.
Well, there's no doubt. Hey, hold on, Chris. We're coming back with final phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, our Independence Day program, after you're done enjoying your moment with your friends or family, and saying a little happy birthday to the United States, we'll have a great program for you in store. I'll be playing Kate Smith's God Bless America in its entirety, Red Skelton's Pledge of Allegiance. That's one of the classics of all times. Neil Diamond, of course, singing America. And also for the rest of the show, Joe Nickel joins us. We'll talk about his work, The Science of Ghosts, and what he's been doing, chasing them down. That'll be our next Coast to Coast show, and when we come back in a moment, we're taking final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We are with, of course, Chris Duane. Chris, where do people get to see your work, your DVDs? Simply YouTube or other places too?
YouTube's probably the easiest place to go to. It's called The Greatest Truth Never Told on YouTube. And you can kind of Google Silver Shield. That's kind of my pen name that I've gone by. The Silver Bullet and the Silver Shield is probably my most famous group of videos. I have the Sons of Liberty Academy, which is, geez, George, I spent 6 years reading and researching for this. I spent a year and a half putting it together. And it's 48 hours of free video lessons that I put together, basically describing the way the world I see it as I see it. And it goes into, you know, we could probably talk for days about this, but it goes into the economics, the historical, the psychological, the spiritual things, all the things that are tied together and why this world is so messed up and what we can do to go about it, making real effective change individually, one by one, by walking away.
Well, let's see what happens, and you believe all this is going to happen sooner than later, don't you?
Yeah, and again, I talk about these systemic things. I mean, we have the baby boomers getting past their peak earning years, peak consumer years, peak debt creation years. The generations that are falling behind them are progressively more broke early on in life. It's stunting, you know, the growth of families. It's stunting job creation. And then we have the rise of these other nations that are, you know, quite honestly, the history and the economics are on their side. I mean, we look at what China was, geez, 10, 20 years ago, and they were, you know, a third world nation. Now, all of a sudden, they own almost, you know, this huge amount of our debt. They have all this manufacturing. They've made alliances with Russia and all this other stuff. So, you know, we're going to come to a tipping point sooner or later. And I don't think Western civilization is prepared for not being the king dog, and we have a lot of responsibility that we need to start taking on a personal level to start preparing for this. And I hope that, you know, my Sons of Liberty Academy and The Greatest Truth Never Told on YouTube helps people along speed up this process, because to me there's five stages of this awakening, and it resembles the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's five stages of grief, and it's denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And right now, the mass of humanity is in denial because they have not been brought face to face with the consequences of actively or passively supporting this debt and death paradigm. Whereas most of the listeners that you know you have here are in one of those last four stages. They're either very angry that you know the bankers are you know taking billions of dollars out of the economy and they get bailed out. Meanwhile, homeowners and you know, manufacturing jobs are sent overseas, and we keep getting the shorter end of the stick. Then there's also people who are in bargaining. I mean, they look down all these different paths. They think, you know, they look in the sovereign man issue. They look into silver. They look into prepping. They look into, you know, all these other things out there in the blogosphere, and you know, trying to figure out what's the path that resonates with them. And then a lot of the people, quite honestly, I mean, there's a lot of folks that have been woke up since, geez, JFK's assassination or, you know, the 80s or 90s, and they're just stuck in depression. And, you know, to me, I think that if we get out of this fear loop and start thinking about what we can take care of in our own personal lives and stop worrying about things outside of our control, you can start making positive, productive change in your own personal life, and that'll allow you to start becoming ready for this last stage, which is acceptance and saying, hey, you know, yeah, there's bad stuff coming, but you know what? One, I can't worry about things that are out of my control, and I'm doing everything I can in my powers now to prepare as best as I can. And I think that the further you are down that path of accepting this reality and preparing the best you can and waking others up, you'll find that you're happier. You can kind of almost look forward to it. Knowing that it's not going to be equally bad everywhere all at once throughout the world. I mean, the dollar collapse is by far going to be the single largest event in human history. But it doesn't mean it's going to be Mad Max in every single nook and cranny of the world. There's going to be different phases. There's going to be different intensities. And if you've learned anything throughout history, anger always burns out. You know, this will pass. And to me, I think a real golden age of humanity can come out of this.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Zorana in the Netherlands. Let's go to their wild card line. Hi, Zorana.
Hi, George. Good morning. I mean, it's morning here.
It sure is.
Yeah. George, well, if I may, I actually have two questions for your guest, which I think is an excellent guest.
Sure, go ahead.
And and a comment, actually. I was thinking, I think the best way, actually, to kind of remedy this situation right now, you have your presidential elections coming along quite soon, is maybe to have your presidents, like, instead of having all these, ridiculous conditions to become a president, maybe they should actually apply as only if they have an experience in creating jobs as businessmen, number one. And second of all, maybe they should all wear suits like the Formula One drivers wear them, you know, so that we can see who finances them and that we can make the rightful choice.
With their little patches, right? All over the place. Yeah.
Exactly. So we know who's financing them. Now, my question for your guest is, I have to say, first of all, it's like I'm an Austrian economist myself, and I see that your guest is in line with this line of thinking and this whole philosophy of liberty, which I totally agree. Now, for me, there's always, like, the way I judge the truth, for me, the truth is always simple, and it makes sense. It's common sense. This is how I came to actually be a libertarian myself and align myself with Austrian economics. But what I have trouble is, like, and I don't know how to go about it, is that this world is actually in a matrix of lies. The information itself is distorted from price onwards, everything. So what happens is that people, instead of those who are in denial still, they are, even if they start waking up, they start waking up to the wrong things because they've been fed the wrong information. You know, it's like, how do you take a responsibility to judge whether you should buy a house or not on this market? You know, your price is your measurement, your price is your information, but somebody who's not into Austrian economics and doesn't understand the business cycle and the bubble will jump on the occasion and buy that house thinking that he's making a good decision. So when now the system is collapsing, that's why we have this Tea Party and all these other parties like coming up with these Occupy Wall Street who have actually no idea what they're fighting for because they don't know what's going on. So they're going down the wrong path. And I'm always afraid, and I'm trying to get to people who are not actually understanding it by trying to point out the simplicity and common sense of what I'm talking about. But they're like, I can't believe it. It can't be that simple. It can be, this is a conspiracy theory. So I get labeled as this like crazy whatever who's into silver and gold while they're like, yeah, they trust their governments and everything. So how does he suggest that we go about it by talking to people? How do we point out the truth and how do we show them the truth from the lies in this system? Because for us, it may be simple, but maybe for somebody else, it's not.
All right. How do we do that?
Well, if I push you, George, what are you naturally going to do?
I'll push you back.
That's right. What do you think you're doing every time that you try to push ideas onto other people?
Doesn't work.
They're mentally going to repulse. And one of the things I love about your show is that you listen to all. I came up with a line that says, listen to all, follow none, and walk your own path the best.
I tried telling one of my callers that the first hour. But
I heard that.
Yeah.
And that's really what we need to do. We need to go along these, and this is another video I did, 5 Stages of Awakening. We need to come to a level of acceptance where you can positively walk forward in a path that makes sense to you, that you're fine with, that you don't feel the need to push your ideas onto others. And if you look at Jesus and Buddha and Gandhi and Martin Luther King, they didn't go door to door and say, hey, you're doing everything wrong, you need to follow me. And yet that's what I feel most of us in this kind of field are doing. We're going to our friends and neighbors and our loved ones, and we're concerned. We're worried about them, and we do it out of concern. But the reality is, we're actually our own worst enemies in spreading this word. And I think that the best thing that we can do is to simply walk the path peacefully, and people will follow. And it could be as simple as, you know, that's why I love doing these YouTube videos. It's a 5-minute video, and you can send out one of these videos and say, hey, what do you think about this? I'm not too sure. Instead of saying, if you don't watch this, you're going to lose everything, and, you know, God help you. That's what we need to do. I think that we need to, walk individually, peacefully in a direction, and people will follow, especially when all the things that we're talking about come true. That's where we really need to step up and kind of get past this I told you so and say, hey, here's what we can do. I'm going to help speed you along. Now that you're ready, you're out of your denial. I think that's the other thing. We don't realize that everybody's in denial right now. It's scary to think these thoughts. Trust me, I don't like talking about the our way of life ending, but it's a reality that's coming. And you're either, people don't, people don't plan to fail, but they fail to plan. And I think that the longer we go down this path and be more positive about it and be a role model, I think the better off we'll be waking people up.
Maybe so. We go next to Bob in Metzger's Field, Indiana. Hey, Bob, thank you. Go ahead.
Hello, George. Been a long time. I used to call in and give you updates on things close to where I live. Last time, I think it was. Remember when the lady had a car accident and ran the fence post through her head?
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, horrible.
Well,
yeah.
Okay, well, I broke my back and fractured my neck after that, and just now getting back into coast. But I had a comment for an earlier caller. He wanted to know where the best place to get silver was or where to get silver from. And eBay has tons of it for sale. And you and I are real close to the same age. And I saved silver since I had a paper out back in the 60s. And I'm selling all of it that I can because I believe that, like Chris says, bartering is going to be the way to go. And if if a person has peaches, an area where they can get peaches or pears, alcohol is what I believe is going to be real good to barter with people. That's not something that will be a luxury, of course, but
back to moonshine.
Pardon me?
We'll be back to moonshine, won't we?
Well, yes, and also recently you had a guest on who had a book out called Alcohol Can Be a Gas.
Yeah, that's David Bloom. That's
right. And he can produce up to 5,500 gallons, according to him, free with your federal permit.
That's right.
And so anyway, that's my thoughts on that subject. I do agree with about 90% of what your guest says, and he's definitely studied it. And it was good talking to you again, George.
All right, Bob. I'm glad you're fighting your way back. I really do. Well, now here's another scenario here for you, Chris. What if government continues to do what they're doing, printing the money, tossing it in, tricking people? How long can they keep the scam going?
Well, I mentioned earlier that this is a mathematical inevitability, and the reality is it's a psychological thing. If we truly had a free and transparent market, and we saw all the cards and this was an open system, we would have resolved that we're insolvent long ago. There would have been, a reality sets into the market. But your other caller was right. Everything is a lie. Our unemployment numbers, it's not 9 or 8%. It's 22%. John Williams over at ShadowStatistics.com uses the old-fashioned way of measuring unemployment. Do you really think that this would even be, a debate if we had unemployment numbers showing 22% in the world economy and the world's largest economy? We wouldn't have this kind of calm in the political market. There would be people really upset. Inflation, they say it's 1 or 2%. It's running at 10 or 12%. That's theft. That's theft of wealth. Inflation is a regressive tax against people. I said when the 2008 crisis happened, Hank Paulson, former Goldman Sachs CEO, was our Treasury Secretary, basically went to Congress and said, hey, give us Wall Street guys $700 billion. You don't get to ask where it goes. And you may or may not get it back. That's not the worst part of the crime. Bloomberg Radio did a Freedom of Information Act and requested from the Federal Reserve, again, this privately owned bank, on how much money that they spent in the crisis to keep this system going. And they came to find out it wasn't the $700 billion that we were all nervous about. The Federal Reserve put out $16 trillion into the world's economy. And not even in the United States, if they spent $16 trillion, which is the equivalent of 1 year's of entire gross domestic product of the United States, they just...
Free money. What a scam, huh?
Yep. What a deal.
Sure is. Let's go to Cornelius in Louisiana. Go ahead, Cornelius.
Thank you, George. And Chris, you being a Marine and George being a Naval officer, I was a MP officer. So I want to thank all the veterans and happy and blessed 4th of July. My question for you, Chris, is if you believe the Bible and you seem like you read the Bible and stuff, all of this stuff is going to come down and it's going to be one world government, one world religion, one world currency. And either you're going to go along with them or not, or beheaded according to the Bible. So that's my comment. God bless y'all. Happy and blessed 4th of July.
Well, indeed you go. There you go. There you go. Let's see. We got time for one or two more. Suzanne's in Long Beach, California. Hi, Suzanne. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I'm going to make a statement, and then I'd like to ask a quick question.
We may not have time, but let's give it a shot. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, the statement is I'm over 81, and about 45 or 50 years ago, I attended a channeling, and the being that was being channeled was George Washington, the father of our country, mm-hmm. and he made the statement, when a person is in debt, everything else in their life is out of balance. Now, that's the end of the statement. The question to your guest is, what year did he say we should buy dimes, silver dimes? How far back should we go to get buy the silver?
As long as they're pure silver, as far back as you can, don't you think, Chris?
Yeah, well, I think the question is, our currency pre-1965, so if you find 1964 and before, dimes, quarters, half dollars, and dollars are made out of 90% silver. And, you know, it's commonly referred to as junk silver, but a friend of mine, you know, quoted the line that it's constitutional silver because I think calling it junk silver doesn't properly describe what the constitutional role. I mean, the dollar was defined in the Constitution by the amount of grains of silver it was represented. So I think that's one of the solutions that we have. I certainly don't think that we should be all on silver. I think we should have competition of silver, and the more competition, the better.
Well, a little variety there. Chris, thank you so much for being on the program. Chris's website, Don't Tread on Me, but all that is linked for you at coasttocoastam.com. For Nathan Staten, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.